Good evening and welcome to This Week in Football from the makers of Low Limit Football on the All In Sports Talk Network. I am your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we bring you the Belgium World Cup preview as we preview the Red Devils on their journey to the 2018 World Cup in Russia. Tonight I have two very special gentlemen joining me, as always, Mr. Roberto Rojas, my co-host, and special guest Mr. Christoph Terror, journalist for HLN, joining us tonight to break down Belgium. Thank you both gentlemen for joining me. I want to start out, Christoph, with you, and I'd like to ask about your connection to Belgian football.
Well, my connection to Belgian football, yeah. I'm born in Belgium. I grew up with the current generation of the current golden generation of Belgium. I was a young starting journalist when this generation started growing. So, because of this generation, I even was sent to England by my newspaper. So I got to see the world thanks to this golden generation of football players. So that's good. I have to thank them for some opportunities too.
Yeah, I mean, it's really a talented Belgium side that we've been blessed to see, at least, you know. And looking into the World Cup history real quick, Christoph, you know, we look at the history real quick. You know, this will be their 14th time making the FIFA World Cup. Their best appearance was in 1986, where they finished fourth, only losing in the semifinals to Diego Maradona's Argentina. But since then, that return in 2014 with that golden generation of Eden Hazard, you know, players like Kevin De Bruyne, Lukaku, Dries Mertens, and many other players that have really come up, and Courtois, you know, that have come up and really demonstrated themselves to the entire world. You know, they were able, and many people had labeled them into that dark horse team in 2014 in Brazil, where they did lose to Argentina in the quarterfinals. Now, heading into 2018, and Christoph, this goes to my first question, you know, how has the people in Belgium labeled this team, you know, certainly a golden generation, and I think the envy of various countries with a few exceptions, you know, but how has the perception been so far, you know, especially since this will be now their, I believe, their third tournament playing together? You know, 2014 World Cup was the first time we saw that, and then Euro 2016. So what has been the reaction, I guess, the expectation, you know, of the fans of heading into this World Cup in Russia?
Well, they aren't that optimistic, to be fair. I think Euro 2016 was a huge disappointment, getting eliminated in the quarterfinals by Wales, a less strong team. Yeah, we used to call them Bills instead of Wales, because it was basically a one-man team, only one star players, and the rest were players from the Championship, from even League One in England. But they surprised us. They were better as a team, and that has put Belgium with both feet on the ground. People aren't expecting that much for the World Cup. Everyone think we're a bit like England, with the continental in England, basically, that this golden generation will bottle it again at the World Cup. So expectations aren't that high. From the other side, players expect a lot from this World Cup. All of them are talking about World Cup, winning the World Cup ambitions, doing better than in the last tournament in Brazil. So that means getting to the semifinal. So the players are quite motivated, but I think the general opinion of people is we're just not strong enough as a team. We haven't played in the last 2 years. We have only played against one strong opponent. That was Roberto Martinez's first game against Spain. We lost against a brilliant Spanish team, and since then we have had quite an easy ride in the qualifications for the World Cup. We've had an easy ride in the friendlies, so we don't know how strong we are. We know that most of our players are performing well for their teams, but they haven't really translated into the national team as yet. So we'll have to see where we are.
Now, I would say, though, the Belgians would have to be at least a little bit optimistic in terms of their run through qualification, which we'll take a look at now. They were unbeaten in Group H. Their only blemish on their record was a 1-1 draw versus Greece at home. They boasted one of the highest or the most potent attacks in Romelu Lukaku, who was fourth in scoring in UEFA completely with 11 goals. They also boasted four of the top six goal scorers in their group, including Lukaku, Eden Hazard, Dries Mertens, and Thomas Munir. They were tied with Germany for the most goals in World Cup qualifying, and they were tied for sixth with defensively only conceding 6 goals in qualification. England and Spain led that that charge with 3 goals each. So, Christoph, my question to you is, when you look back on qualification, and this team has been qualified now for well over, almost a year at this point, what was most impressive about Belgium in their run through World Cup qualification?
Well, the most impressive thing was that we easily beat the smaller countries. We won 8-1 against Estonia. We brushed away, we brushed off Gibraltar. We were really good against those small teams. We won easily from Bosnia too. That was always a little bit of our bogey team, Bosnia. We've always had difficulties against them. We didn't do it. The only team that caused a little bit of difficulties was Greece. But as you know, I think the gap between the real strong nations and the smaller nations is quite big. And as we haven't played, as we have played friendly matches against Mexico, a stronger team than those who were in the group, we were struggling. So we have a manager that is brilliantly in playing attacking football, but I'm not sure if the balance in the team is already right. If we're defensively strong enough, if Kompany is fit, if Vertonghen is fit, if Alderweireld is fit, if Vermaelen is fit, we have 4 good defenders. We only need 3 of them. But if one of them gets injured, we have issues because we have no backups in defense. Plus, we have no real good wing backs. If Meunier on the right back gets injured, we have to play Nasser Chadli. That's an attacking midfielder over there. And on the left wing, we have Carrasco, who's playing as an attacking midfielder now in China as a left winger. Mm-hmm. So that are our weak points in attack. We have, yeah, we can just choose whoever we want. Midfield, same wealth. But yeah, it's the balance on the wing backs and in central defense that we might have difficulties, and that might be crucial factors against the big teams, against the Germanys of this world, who are more clinical, who have more experience in playing these big games on a big level. As you might see now in the Champions League, in the quarterfinals, we have only, let's count, 4 or 5 Belgians playing in teams that will compete for the Champions League. And only 2 of them are important players in that team. So we don't have that real experience to play for the trophies in Europe. And that's an important thing, I think, too. That experience we're lacking. This player of Spain, every year, Barcelona, Real Madrid guys, they reach quarterfinals, semifinals, finals. Germany, the same with that core of Bayern Munich. And we're lacking that a bit. So that's an unknown factor. Although Portugal won the Euros only with Cristiano Ronaldo and 10 other players in the tournament, everything can happen. But that's a little bit of our fear that we don't have the experience to fight for the biggest trophies yet. And we might never have that. So, yeah.
Now, of course, looking into the nitty-gritty, I think now you look at these matches real quick, and there's a game that stands out that we'll be talking about in a little bit. But looking into Belgium's group, they were grouped in Group G, and in order of the matches, they take on Panama first on the 18th, the first ever match for Panama in a World Cup. Then they take on Tunisia on the 23rd, and obviously I think the big one, and many people want to point this out as, you know, the decider of who will finish first or second, and that's England against Belgium. And you know, Christoph, you know, looking at how Belgium and how many Belgian players are playing in the Premier League, and obviously you being there based in London, you know, you have players like De Bruyne, you have players like Fellaini, Lukaku, Hazard, you know, you have players like Dembele, Kompany, Courtois. I mean, you know, these are players that are absolutely familiar with all the English players that are on this national team. So do you feel that this match might be in factor more to England rather than Belgium, knowing that they already know how their opponents play compared to a Panama or a Tunisia? You know, how do you view this group so far? And you feel that it's not even that as straightforward as you could think, knowing of the unknown quantity that both Panama and Tunisia both pose?
Well, I think we can. I think everyone in Belgium expects us to beat Panama and to beat Tunisia. In our eyes, they don't have the level of Greece and Bosnia, who were in our group. So, even the England game might not be important for us. It can basically be a friendly if we win our two first games, where everyone expects that game will just decide who will be seeded as first and who will be seeded as second team. That's how we look at it. It might be even a friendly game. So our group is easy. We're very happy with our group, but what comes next won't be that easy. Like Colombia or Poland, and in the next round, Germany or Brazil. We will only see the real Belgium after the group phase. We expect an easy round. We expect nine points out of nine. So, yeah, we don't know Panama. A few colleagues of mine have checked out Panama. They say it's not a great team. Tunisia, the same. Even England, they have an upcoming generation. They have good attack with Kane, Ali, Sterling, those kind of guys, but they don't have the wealth in the team that we have. So we expect us to win this group, and we're not worried about, although we have worries about quarterfinals and what comes after the group phase, we don't have any worries about the group phase. So
yeah, no, absolutely. And Joel, I guess I'll pose the same question to you. I mean, you know, looking into this big decider between Belgium and England for that last spot, you know, many people want to pose that as the deciding game because, you know, if one of the teams would to finish first in that group, then that would mean they would potentially see a quarterfinal appearance against Brazil. And if they finish second, then you could possibly see them, of course, assuming that they get past the Poland, Colombia, Senegal, or a Japan, you know, they could possibly see themselves in a quarterfinal matchup against Germany. So just kind of a two-part question to you, Joe, you know, who do you think has the advantage heading into this last game, knowing the experience that both these teams play in, and certainly the familiarity as well? And also, you know, if you're one of these teams, you know, which one would you prefer? You know, would you prefer the Brazil side or would you prefer the Germany side in the quarterfinals?
You know, you bring up a great point, and this was going to be a question I was actually going to throw at Christoph as well. Because, like you said, if you win the group, you end up going into the side of the bracket that's going to have Brazil. It's also going to have France on that side. If you lose the group, you end up going into the Argentina-Germany side. Although you would end up seeing one of those two teams in the quarterfinals instead of the round of 16. So there is, I think there's a benefit actually of losing the group. But you also start to toy with the momentum factor, and you start to toy with the ideas that, you know, coming in on a loss that maybe people don't feel as confident as they should, even though, you know, the plan all along was not to win the group, but to finish second. You also don't know what happens behind you with Panama and Tunisia. You could actually go into that England group, that England matchup after winning your first two matches. And if you lose to England, and let's say you lose like a 2-0 loss to England, but let's say Tunisia maybe previously beat England in the first leg, destroyed Panama, and then you're looking at a goal differential situation where, you know, they could possibly get by because, let's say, you know, and I'm playing numbers here, but you could have a lackluster victory versus a Tunisia, and then Tunisia takes care of business against everybody else. You lose that England game and you're out, which would be something miraculous. But I think there's a benefit to winning the group, obviously, with the confidence and the momentum and that sort of concept. But at the same time, I think there's actually, even in this instance, a benefit of losing the group, finishing second, and maybe getting into that bracket that might, at least in the initial next round, might be a little softer and a little easier. But once you get into the quarterfinals of the World Cup, none of the matches are going to be easy. So, Christoph, I want to ask you, is it beneficial to win the group, given that path to the cup final, or is it beneficial to lose the group and taking the other path?
Well, it doesn't matter, I think. If you want to get in the semi-finals, you will have to beat Germany or Brazil. From a Belgian point of view, I think we really want to avoid Germany because Germany is really, they have that winning mentality. We've never played well against Germany. So we want to avoid Germany more than Brazil, I think.
Okay.
Because Brazil, yeah, they can have their off days, but we want to avoid more Germans than Brazil. Something with Germans, they're a tournament team. They've always been. Brazil has that too, but yeah, they have a bit. We know what happened at the last World Cup too. So with Brazil, so they don't give us that much fear as the Germans.
I understood. I want to move on now to the players to watch. And obviously with the Belgian national team, there are literally hundreds of players to watch, but we're going to try to narrow it down here. The first player that I want to talk about is actually captain of the team, Vincent Kompany. We find Vincent, especially at Manchester City, we find him to be injured quite often, never manages to stay healthy. If I remember correctly, he missed the Euros due to injury 2 years ago. So with Roberto Martinez taking over this particular team, does he feel confident in playing Vincent Kompany or even bringing him on this team? Or would he prefer to go with Jan Vertonghen, Toby Alderweireld, or even Thomas Vermaelen on the team instead as his center backs?
Well, if Kompany is fit, he will always play because he brings something extra. Although he's had his injuries, you see it now at City too. When he's fit, he's still one of the best centre backs in the world. So, although he's lost some pace, he's lost some mobility, he's still a great defender and he's a great leader. So, Belgium really loves him. So, if he's fit, he will play. I'm not sure he will play all three of the group games, because at City you see it too, that Guardiola uses him not every game. He plays one game, he gets a rest in the other game. They are really cautious with him. So that might happen in Belgium too, with Belgium too, for instance, playing the first two games, skip the third game if it's not important anymore. But for instance, we're now having an issue with Toby Alderweireld, who has been injured for almost 4 months and won't be playing a lot anymore because he doesn't want to extend his contract with Tottenham. So that might be an issue too. He might lack some rhythm too. Vertonghen, he will have his place. He will always play. It will and Vermaelen, if Kompany or Alderweireld isn't fit, then Vermaelen will play alongside them. So, but Kompany is a crucial factor that will, if he's not injured before the World Cup, if he is in the squad, there will be a lot of talk about Kompany anymore, because still in Belgium, he's seen as, we always call him jokingly the president, because he's intelligent, he likes to speak, he's a natural leader, He draws all attention to him in the national team because he's been the face of the national team since his debut in 2003. So he's already there for 15 years. He will draw all the attention. So there will be lots of stories about him getting injured, how is his fitness. And when he gets injured, there will be a lot of criticism on the manager too, because you expect him to get injured again because he has that reputation. But we'll have to see. He believes in it. For him, it's his last big tournament. He's made his main goal this season was getting fit for the World Cup. He wants to show what his world on the World Cup, and maybe his mentality will conquer his physical problems, and he won't get injured at the World Cup. So we have to hope for him, because he's been a great player for our country and for Manchester City, one of the most successful Belgians still in European football.
No doubt about it. I want to turn my focus now to the other side of the pitch and look at the striker position here. And the names that I can give you are just amazing. And some of the names I'm going to leave off because they can drop back into the midfield. But, for example, when you look at this list of names, Christian Benteke, Romelu Lukaku, Thorgan Hazard, Michy Batshuayi, Divock Origi, Dries Mertens. Mertens is sort of the exception because he is 30 years old. But all of the strikers I just mentioned are under 30 years old. And I know I didn't mention Eden Hazard. Kevin Morales is also 30 years old. So there's plenty of talent at the striker position here for the Belgian national team. Who is left off the list? Who stays home during this World Cup? I mean, obviously Lukaku's coming. I think Dries Mertens is definitely a lock as well. But who else? But who would be the one that is left home on this list?
Well, I think Batshuayi is sure of his place at the World Cup too in the squad. Mm-hmm. Roberto Martinez likes Thorgan Hazard too. Thorgan and Eden are really good friends, really good brothers, so they will take Thorgan too. I think Origi and Benteke, they will have different. One of them will have to stay at home, I think. Martinez selected for the last friendly game Origi instead of Benteke. But Origi is now not playing anymore, or not a lot anymore, for Wolfsburg. So he might lack a rhythm to the World Cup too. Plus, Benteke can offer a different profile. He's the tall striker who can break a game or break down a game with a header and win a game. So it will be a difficult choice, but I think it will be between Origi and Benteke. And Miralaz, I'm not sure if he will be in the squad or not. He's struggling with Olympiacos, but Roberto Martinez has worked with him at Everton, really likes him, and he's always one of the three subs that comes on in the national team. I think he's made 8 or 9 appearances as a sub on the Martinez, so he might select him too. So I think Benteke or Origi, one of them, won't be at the World Cup. I think maybe one of the others might struggle too, but Origi or Benteke.
And many people might have forgotten that when Roberto Martinez was the head coach at Everton, that he did have Morales under, you know, playing under him. So there's a familiarity there. My last question about players, I'm actually going to pose to you, Rob, first. And I know we've looked at the midfield for the Belgian national team. We talk about Kevin De Bruyne. We talk about, Yuri Tielemans, who's over at Monaco right now. We talked about Carrasco quickly. There are a bunch of other names, but two names that really stick out to me are Raja Nainggolan and Marouane Fellaini. I want your opinion, Rob, and then obviously we can ask Christoph this question as well. Do you think both of these players end up going to Russia? Do you think maybe one of them is left out? And if so, which one is left out?
I think both of them will go in. I go first. Sorry. I think they both go. I think both of them are exceptional talents for the Belgian national team. That I think the absence of one or two of the players would be huge for this team. And already, what is a stacked midfield with Witsel, De Bruyne, Dembele, Tielemans, Carrasco, and many other players. And I think that when you're looking at the sensational performance that Nainggolan has done for Roma, and maybe Fellaini, although he might have been criticized recently because of what he's done at Manchester United, I think he's still a valuable piece to this Belgian side moving forward. I mean, you know, I guess I'll pose this question to you, Christoph. You know, what do you think about this whole situation between both Fellaini and Nainggolan? You know, do you see both of them go? Do you see one of them go? What is your take on that?
I'm sure that Fellaini will go because he has a specific profile too that all managers seem to like. Fellaini has often been criticized by fans, but all of his managers love him. Even Louis van Gaal loved him. Jose Mourinho liked him. David Moyes liked him. And all of his previous managers liked him. Even Carlo Ancelotti liked him. He tried to get him to PSG in the year, a few years ago. So managers like him. So he will always be in the squad. Nainggolan is a question mark because Roberto Martinez and Nainggolan, they don't get along. Nainggolan has been out of the squad for a few times, and that's led to huge criticism on Martinez in Belgium because nobody could understand that the Prince of Rome, Francesco Totti, is still the King of Rome. Nainggolan is the Prince in Rome, so popular over there, wasn't in the squad. I can understand why he wasn't selecting it at that point because Kevin De Bruyne is playing as a central midfielder, not as an attacking midfielder anymore, like he used to play under Wilmots. And he plays along with Fell, a disciplined defensive midfielder who plays in China. Basically, fans never understand the manager's point of view. Kevin De Bruyne needs a really disciplined player along him, like he has at City with Fernandinho, a guy who recovers a lot of balls, plays simple passes, don't make too complicated. Nainggolan at Roma, he plays a little bit in the role of De Bruyne now at the national team. He's not the defensive midfielder, he's more an attacking midfielder. So Martinez sees him as an attacking midfielder, not as a defensive or a central midfielder. And there's lots of competition at that position. You still have Dembele, who isn't playing for Belgium either. You have Fellaini, you have De Bruyne, and I think you will only select four players for those two positions. So one will be left out, and it might be Nainggolan, who hasn't made himself popular by... Yeah, he's a smoker. Roberto Martinez doesn't like that at the Euros. Mark Wilmots, a previous manager, gave him a room where he could smoke outside. He allowed it. Martinez doesn't allow it. So if one of the midfielders of Fellaini or Nainggolan will miss out, it's Nainggolan, although Nainggolan was in the spot for the Saudi Arabia friendly last week. He might be still in the squad as number 23, but he won't be playing. He won't be in the first 11.
No, absolutely. And this goes into my next question, Christophe. Obviously, you know, kind of a two-part question for Stan. Firstly, looking into predictions in my next segment, you know, being someone that you are based in London, you know, and you see the amount of Belgian players playing in the Premier League, it's a grueling schedule. We both know that. And I think we've seen that in big tournaments like the World Cup and especially in the Euros, you know, and performances by the English national team, that these players get burnout when it comes to these big types of tournaments, you know, and that kind of perhaps factored a little bit 4 years ago in Brazil with a player like Eden Hazard, for example. You know, looking into this World Cup, you know, are you a bit fearful that this burnout could happen again heading into the World Cup, especially given the grueling schedule that all these players have had, you know, being prominent players for the big teams like Manchester United or Manchester City or Chelsea or Spurs or any of those other clubs, you know, does that give you a bit of fear for this Belgian team?
Not really fear, because lots of the good players will have had a tournament, will have played 50, 60 games. We always forget that Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi, they play 60 games a season and they play every single minute too. But what was a mistake of Mark Wilmots, I think, before the World Cup was taking them immediately to a training camp somewhere in Switzerland and pushing them hard after the season they had. Martinez has now already planned the physical work because he's worked in the Premier League. He knows how tired those guys are, that they have. It's more a mental thing than a physical thing. Like 2 weeks off in January might help them to recover mentally. 2 weeks switching off, so they feel physically better too. And he now only played one friendly game during the international break on the Tuesday, and all the important players got a week off, so they had 5-6 days of holiday already now, so they could switch off. And after the season, they will get the main players who have played more than 3,000 minutes will get a week off too. They will get a separate program. They won't push them. It's a little bit like Portugal used to do with Cristiano Ronaldo, put him on a yacht in the Mediterranean Sea for a week and let him come back afterwards. And that's what Martinez is planning to do with his best players, to give them some time off after the season so they can recover, certainly mentally, and then he will implement them in the squad, in the training sessions. Because like players who haven't played a lot, they will have to get pushed physically. They will have to do another set of training sessions to get fit too. So he will work with separate groups, and that might be the right approach. In the group phase, we won't have the excuse of being tired, because the English national squad, our third opponent, will have the same excuse. And we are tired. Yeah, we're both tired. So it doesn't. It won't count for us. So it's a fear that, for instance, De Bruyne will have played a lot, but Messi will have played even more games. So, yeah, it's just something that always come back. But most players will be tired, I think. So even Spain has some players playing in England, they will be tired too. Argentina have players in England. I think every big country has players in England, so everyone will face the same kind of problems. We have six or seven players of the Premier League. But we also have a few players in Italy and in China who've had a winter break or a different approach to the season. So it won't be the biggest excuse we can use. Oh, we're tired. Mentally tired, maybe.
Absolutely. And of course, you know, you talked about the team, and, you know, this is one of the more stacked and in-depth teams in all of world football, comparable to a Germany or a Spain or a Brazil or a France as well, you know. You know, what do you think is the strongest starting 11 that Martinez can put heading into this World Cup? You know, what, given all the amount of talent that they have, you know, Christoph, you know, what's the best lineup that you think that Martinez could field at this World Cup?
He will go for his lineup. He will go for Courtois in goal. At the back, it will be Alderweireld, Kompany, Vertonghen. In midfield, it will be on the wing backs, Meunier on the right, Carrasco on the left, Witsel as a defensive midfielder, Kevin De Bruyne as a box to box midfielder, and then up front it will be Lukaku as the main striker with Hazard and Dries Mertens behind it. That's his main formation. If it's the strongest formation, not sure. But he will play like that. It's his team that has played most of the qualification campaign too. So it's obvious that he goes back to that team.
All right. So in a 3-4-3, that still is quite the formidable formation, to say the least. So. I want to close out the interview tonight and ask you a couple of questions. First of all, for this Belgian side, given that this is sort of a golden age for them, what would be a reasonable expectation in terms of finish for this Belgian side?
Semi-finals, I think. Yeah. We will quarterfinals. We always get in the quarterfinals, and then you just have to do better than in the last two tournaments, and getting into the semi-finals, and there we will see if this squad has the winning mentality, has the focus, the mental focus, the concentration that is needed in a tournament, the focus that, for instance, Germany always has.
Okay. And in a perfect world, Belgium raises the title July 15th in Russia. What would that mean to the players, and what would it mean to the people of Belgium?
Well, I think everyone will be very proud, and what it will mean for the players, that they are a bunch of friends. For some, it will be for everyone the highlight of the career. You can only win the World Cup once or twice in a footballer's career, so it would mean the world to them, I think. And I think everyone in Belgium will be proud, although the players get lots of stake for not performing for the national team as they do for their clubs. Mm-hmm. It might give them the hope again, the hope in the national team. Might bring the optimism back around the national team, as for some they are now seen as money grabbers, players who don't come, who don't make a lot of effort when they play for the national team. While that is just people talking and exaggerating, because, for instance, Kevin De Bruyne isn't that good for Belgium as he is for City, because that's logical. Yeah, you can't explain that to fans who don't see. The problem is with all those, we have not basically only two of the internationals that are selected in a group of 23, only two play in the Belgian league, and I think we get Belgian people get a little bit estranged from their own players, because they don't see them playing. People on a Saturday afternoon, they won't watch Premier League football, they only see the highlights. So they don't really know what to expect from their players. And because they get lots of noises, how good is De Bruyne, how good is this player? And then for the national team, they perform less, they're disappointed. And then they say, oh, when it's for the national team, they don't earn a lot of money here for the national team. They only want to perform for their clubs because they don't earn the money here. That's a little bit of view that, I will say 30% of the Belgians have towards the national team.
Okay.
And that doesn't help, but that might change that perception that they're not money going. Like, for instance, Eden Hazard, asked him. He didn't even want to. They had difficult negotiations about their bonuses for the World Cup. And if you ask Eden Hazard, do you need that bonus? And he said, I would even play for free for the national team. I don't care about those bonuses. It's just pocket money for me. I play for my country. I want to play for free. But that's not the image that the people have. They think, oh, they have difficult negotiations about this, about image rights, about bonuses. They only want more money. Well, it's the opposite, I think. But they want to get what they're worth. That's logical. They all know their value, and that's what they're asking in negotiations too. So that's pretty logical. The problem is that the Belgian Federation is pretty inexperienced with all those kind of things like image rights and bonuses deal. I think the Belgian team has grown too fast. The players in the Premier League are used to a very, very professional professional negotiations, their agents too. And then going back to Belgium, where the federation is just led by amateurs, people who do it, who don't even do it all professionally, it's a step back, and that makes negotiations difficult.
It would certainly, especially when you have a federation that's on one page and players that are on another page, it certainly would be problematic at best, no doubt about it. Gentlemen, I do want to thank you both for joining me tonight and helping me break down the Belgian national team. And again, this was your Belgium World Cup preview on This Week in Football from the makers of Low Limit Football on the All In Sports Talk Network. I'm your host, Joe Uccello. Thanks for listening, and good night.